All right. Good morning, everybody. Good morning, all you magnificent millet heads of the world. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Today is May 6th, 2026, and there's great news. Everybody around the world is celebrating because the war is over for the fifth time in 19 days. That is according to the same guy at Axios who's been saying the same thing. According to the same anonymous sources, we've got oil is plunging. Stocks are ripping. So is it maybe it's real this time, or maybe it's just more of the same BS. Oil down $8 to $94 a barrel as of the last time I looked. It was down $14 earlier. Stocks, Bitcoin, bonds, gold, all ripping in unison. The dollar way down here as the world adapts to. Apparently, the Strait of Hormuz is like wide open again for like the fifth time in 19 days. Like everything's back to normal. That's according to Barak Ravid at Axios, who's reporting on this. And Barak Ravid, he's this Israeli journalist who works for Axios and CNN, who's been reporting essentially this same story over and over again, and the market reacts to it as if it's gospel. Now, according to this latest iteration of this story, there's this one-page MOU, Memorandum of Understanding, that's been submitted by the United States to the Iranians via the Pakistanis, includes 14 bullet points. We haven't seen the bullet points. We don't know. President Trump did suspend Project Freedom, his plan to escort ships through the Strait of Hormuz late yesterday. That's after the Iranians shot at a bunch of boats, including our Navy, and launched multiple missile strikes at the United Arab Emirates, despite somehow not violating the ceasefire. Somebody explain that to me, but I digress. And then there's all kinds of statements released by the Iranians this morning about this toll booth thing and websites for applying for passage of the Strait of Hormuz that shows me they are not really serious at all. We're not any closer to a deal, at least doesn't seem like it. But hey, Axios says a thing and the world reacts. That is the story this morning. By the way, guys, I'm having some work done on the house and they cut the cable line accidentally yesterday. So I'm doing this whole thing through a hotspot on my phone this morning. I don't know what the quality is going to look like. I apologize for any choppiness in the video. It's going to be a short-term thing, I assure you. We also got AMD earnings. AMD is absolutely ripping on earnings this morning. Data centers, big tech CapEx, no surprises there. What is surprising to me this morning is Supermicro Computer, SMCI. They are also ripping on earnings. This is as their co-founders being indicted for smuggling chips to China illegally, the same co-founder that they fired after their previous accounting scandal. Then they rehired him as soon as they got the stock relisted. Who believes anything these people say is beyond me? A guy at Supermicro said a thing. Oh, let me go spend money based on that. Okay. What success manual did you find that in? Well, apparently people are buying it this morning. Also interesting news from Supermicro Computer. Is they have got, I love these stories, another AI nuclear story. This time it's Nano Nuclear, another pre-revenue micro-nuclear reactor company that's never built a reactor, doesn't even have a prototype, but they swear one day they will. Trust me, bro. They signed a non-binding letter of intent with Supermicro to use their micro-reactors to power data centers, which Supermicro doesn't run data centers. But whatever, a bunch of crooks said a thing about nuclear power with a company that doesn't yet do nuclear power. Stocks ripping across the board. It's the 2020s. What can I say? We've got Disney posted solid earnings beat in virtually every category other than the ongoing issues at ESPN that they've been dealing with for over a decade. Good morning for Disney. We got ADP private payrolls came out. The United States economy added 109,000 jobs for the month of April. That bodes well for the non-farm payrolls that we expect later this week on Friday. Some of the categories, trade, transport, utilities, construction, and health and education, some similar themes that we have seen over the last few months. And we've got an interesting one from the Financial Stability Board, or the FSB. This is a gaggle of central bankers from around the world. This organization is funded by the Bank of International Settlements. And they are out with their action plan on private credit. And this action plan doesn't really take any action. They suggest exploratory committees and having conversations and discussions going forward. Like, yeah, we've got a plan to have a plan eventually. We hope that is me and three other guys. Yeah. Okay. So that's what the FSB is out with. Let me see if I can summarize this FSB plan. Private credit is a box. We know there are problems in the box, but we can't see inside the box. So we hope to have a plan to address the problems in the box someday, hopefully, maybe. That's what's going on in private credit this morning. And again, we're just a few weeks away from the return of those stories that we got last month about the surges in redemptions and the gating of withdrawals. That's going to come back at the end of the next quarter. We saw it over in the first quarter. We will see it again because nothing has changed. And, you know, while the whole world is saying, oh, don't worry, it's software. Well, remember, we had that big hit over at HSBC yesterday. That wasn't software. That was mortgage fraud. First Brands, that wasn't software. That was receivables fraud, auto parts. Tricolor Auto, that was collateral fraud. Car loans. Carriox Capital, that was receivables fraud for telecom. None of those big blowups in private credit had anything to do with software. But everybody's like, oh, don't worry. It's just a software problem because AI is so awesome. Okay, sure. Guys, we got a lot to talk about this morning. Why don't we shrink my big melon of a head and let's see what's going on in the world of finance. Don't forget the like button and the subscribe button so you can have your coffee with the melon heads because we do this every business morning. And right now, stocks are ripping-ish. They were ripping, I should say. Big gain here. That's on that Axios report from the same guy from the other Axios report, according to the same sources that never want to be named. Stocks ripped on that news, but you notice they started rolling over around 7 a.m. Eastern time, heading back lower as the Iranians started doing Iranian things. And now the S&P is higher by 51 points or 0.7%. The Dow, same shape of the curve there, higher by 423 points or 0.86% to the upside. And the NASDAQ is higher by 311 points or 1.11%. Stocks are up across the board this morning. The U.S. dollar is sharply weaker, off by 54 basis points, 97.95. That makes sense. Oil is traded in dollars. A big drop in oil prices means slightly less demand for dollars. So we're seeing the Dixie weaken a little bit here. But you'll notice a big dip and then some more after that. But around 7 a.m., right as markets started to turn and head back down a little bit, we saw the dollar start to strengthen. The world is coming to its senses, I think, and realizing, oh, this is just another one of those wag the dog headlines. Somebody needed to jawbone oil lower today. What can I say? Looking over at the bond market, we've got yields are dropping sharply. This is interesting to see yields dropping sharply. Typically, bonds are a safe haven asset. People buy bonds when they're running for safety, but bonds behaving a little bit like a risk asset this morning with prices moving higher. And when prices move higher, you get yields moving lower, hence the red. The 30-year yield, 4.934, that's off by almost 5 basis points. The 10-year yield, 4.353, lower by 6.5 points. The 2 years at 3.872, lower by almost 7 points, about 6.5 points there. And the 1 month is actually higher by a fraction of a point at 3.649. And looking over at commodities, again, speaking of safe haven demands, not acting like safe havens, gold and silver behaving like risk assets again this morning. I get why they're green. The dollar is weaker. When the dollar gets weaker, gold and silver typically rally. But that being said, we've got a major risk on move happening in markets right now, and precious metals are rallying along with the risk assets. That makes me very nervous. I've been observing this for quite a while now. I don't quite get it, and it just gives me the heebie-jeebies. I'm not going to lie to you guys. Spot gold, $46.77, higher by $120, 2.62% in the green. Spot silver, $76.76, higher by $3.93, or 5.4% to the upside. Again, I got the heebie-jeebies about the whole risk thing, but I still like the shiny. Copper, meanwhile, higher by 3.3%. Platinum, higher by 3.1%. Palladium, higher by 2.8%. Metals up across the board. Dogs and cats living together. Mass hysteria. Crude oil, though, down sharply. $7 lower now. For WTI crude, $95.22, off by 7%. Similar move happening in Brent. All right, big, big drops in oil. Let's take a look at that chart here. Again, big red candle. Now, you'll notice, guys, the wick on this candle, it's a lot bigger than where we're currently at. Let's set this to 1 minute candles. And you can see, again, kind of the same thing. We had this big drop in oil overnight around 7 a.m. Eastern time. It started to give up some of that decline here. So something changed around 7 a.m. I think it had to do with some of these comments that came from the Iranians, but we'll get more into that in just a minute here. We've got Bitcoin is sharply higher this morning. $82,211 is priced on Coinbase, higher by $1,300. Let's set this to minute candles, see if we got the same shape. Not quite so much. Actually, we do. Bitcoin was ripping overnight. 7 a.m. Eastern time comes around, and it starts to head a little bit lower. Let's talk about this, because a big part of this latest rip in Bitcoin has been strategy and their use of Stretch, their new magic money Ponzi scheme that's inflating Bitcoin's price. Bitcoin treasury firm Strategy breaks from never sell approach to the flagship crypto. This is interesting. Strategy even talking about possibly someday selling Bitcoin is news. Strategy's latest earnings release marks a subtle but meaningful shift in the company's approach to Bitcoin. Instead of passively stockpiling Bitcoin, it's going to more actively manage the balance sheet to maximize value of Bitcoin per share. That's a reversal from the company's longstanding never sell strategy, which originated with chairman, founder, and Bitcoin evangelist Michael Saylor. And it comes as the company posts a $12.5 billion net loss in the first quarter due to the slump in Bitcoin's price at the beginning of the year. Our ability to sell Bitcoin, either to buy U.S. dollars or sell Bitcoin to buy debt, if it's accretive to our Bitcoin per share, is something that we would consider going forward, said Fong Li, president and CEO of the company, on the earnings call. That is a big shift in Strategy's language there, talking about selling Bitcoin to buy debt. What the heck does that mean? And also, we got this one from Michael Saylor on Twitter today, reassuring everybody, Bitcoin capital gains funds Strategy credit dividends. So again, that is suggesting that Strategy might sell Bitcoin in order to pay their expenses and their Stretch dividends, right? Now, Stretch, STRC, that's that new, a lot of people are calling it a Ponzi scheme, probably because it really resembles a Ponzi scheme, that MicroStrategy is issuing. And as they sell shares of Stretch, they're using that to buy Bitcoin. Well, Stretch pays this big dividend. That's the big draw, right? It's a dividend of like 11%. What he's saying here is Bitcoin's capital gains fund Stretch dividends. So if there are no Bitcoin capital gains, where do Stretch's dividends come from? There aren't any. So the only way Stretch can afford to pay their dividend is if Bitcoin keeps going up in perpetuity. So then I ask you, Stretch shareholders, why not just own Bitcoin? Why own Stretch? If the dividends you're collecting is the reason you're buying it, and the only reason those dividends exist is if Bitcoin keeps going up forever, then why not just own the freaking Bitcoin? Because the capital gains from Bitcoin going up are going to be a lot more than the dividend that Stretch is paying you. And if there are no capital gains from Bitcoin, then Stretch is worthless because it doesn't pay a dividend. And this is why I'm so always just talking about why I just think this is a complicated financial product that it's not complicated. They make it sound complicated, but it's marketed to financial illiterates in order for Michael Saylor's infinite money glitch to keep going. And well, now it looks like he's got to start selling it. All right, but here's the big story this morning. Iran evaluating U.S. proposal to end the war as China calls for peace. Iran is evaluating a new proposal from the U.S. to end the near 10-week war, according to people familiar with the matter, as China added its voice to global diplomatic pressure to wrap up the conflict. Washington's one-page memorandum of understanding will, if Iran accepts it, lead to the gradual reopening of the Strait of Hormuz. Couldn't help but notice that gradual there. And the lifting of the American blockade on Iranian ports. That's according to the person who asked not to be identified, of course. Nothing has yet been agreed, the person said, and detailed negotiations on Iran's nuclear program will come later in the process. Axios, read Barak Ravid, earlier reported on the plan, which includes provisions for the potential removal of sanctions on Tehran. Iran is expected to send a response that hopefully isn't a missile via mediator Pakistan in the next 2 days, the person said. All right. And I want to send a shout out to my friend Samantha LeDuc, who posted this one. This sums it up pretty well. Like clockwork, Axios fake news that moves markets is like a Bessent dollar swap that must be returned in time. And she's quoting Noodles here, Crypto Paul, who says, Axios reported an Iran deal as imminent 5 times in 19 days, 5 times, no deal. Why does the same story keep coming from the same reporter? His name is Barak Ravid, and he's got deep sources to the White House and Israeli intelligence. But I'm sure these people familiar with the matter are very credible. And right as that's going on, we got Walter Bloomberg says Iran moves to regulate Hormuz transit. Iran has launched a new website and authority to oversee traffic through the Strait of Hormuz, signaling plans to charge ships for safe passage. The site is currently empty, but vessels are expected to receive rules and instructions via email. And it looks like those rules have come out. Here's the rules. An email sent by Persian Gulf Strait Authority to several shipping companies whose ships are stranded in the Gulf with instructions for passing the Strait of Hormuz. Priority of payment in Iran's national currency, which was $1.8 million to the dollar a few days ago. Okay, you got to pay in toilet paper. Issuance of guarantees in Iranian banks. I'm not really sure what that means, to be honest with you. Does that mean insurance has to be routed through Iran's banks? I don't know. If a country caused damage to Iran in the recent war, it must first pay the damages before obtaining a passage permit. Countries that have sanctioned Iran or blocked Iran's money are not allowed passage. All right, so what? Payment of reparations for the war? U.S., Saudi, UAE, Israeli ships not allowed to pass? The correct title, Persian Gulf, must be written on all documents. Well, apparently I have to throw out my letterhead that talks about the Gulf of America Junior. I guess that's not going to be included in there. And non-compliance with the above will result in seizure and a fine of 20% of the cargo value. Does it really look like the Iranians are serious about this peace deal here? I mean, because this is a big middle finger. Nobody's going to go along with this. Nobody. This, guys, nothing has changed. And yet oil is just plummeting and stocks are ripping on this. Bombs probably be flying by the end of the day. Anyway, we've got earnings from AMD also this morning. AMD stock soars on Q1 earnings beat and better than expected outlook. AMD reported its first quarter results after the bell on Tuesday, beating expectations on the top and bottom lines and topping Wall Street's projections on second quarter revenue outlook. That's putting it mildly. This was a big beat by AMD, and the stock is ripping because of it. For the quarter, AMD saw earnings per share of $1.37 on revenue of $10.25 billion. Analysts had called for $1.28 and revenue of $9.89. The company saw EPS of 96 cents and revenue of $7.43 billion in the same quarter last year. Big growth, big beat. And in the second quarter, AMD says it will see between $10.9 billion and $11.5 billion in revenue. Wall Street had flagged that amount at $10.52 billion. So the guidance was raised as well. Their Q1 data center revenue came in at $5.8 billion, up 57% year over year and ahead of expectations for $5.6 billion. More data centers, more big tech CapEx, nothing new here except AMD stock is ripping. It's up 14.75% here. It was up over 20% earlier this morning, but still $407.46. Good day for AMD. And this thing is already up 66% year to date. It's just going to keep going, apparently. And in this one, well, what can I say? Supermicro Computers will buy anything Charles Lang tells them to. The people who invest in this company, I don't know, they'll believe anything. Is Supermicro stock finally turning a corner after smuggling allegations, after earnings? That's after the accounting allegations last year. That's after the other accounting allegations a few years before that. Man, this company just loves to turn corners. Supermicro Computer stock was surging after the server maker reported mixed financial results. Is it finally turning a corner after the smuggling allegations? For its fiscal third quarter, Supermicro posted adjusted earnings of 84 cents a share on revenue of $10.2 billion. Analysts were expecting 62 cents a share on revenue of $12.4 billion. And you can totally believe them because they're chip smugglers. In the same period last year, Supermicro reported 31 cents a share on revenue of $4.6 billion. Hey, just a reminder, these earnings are audited by BDO. Oh, isn't BDO the same firm that First Brands executives said that they chose because of their lax standards? I'm sure that's nothing. The company has gotten a major boost from the rising demand from infrastructure needed to power artificial intelligence, blah, 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 AI. Supermicro stock has tumbled 77% from its record closing high of $118.81 on March 13th of 2024, as investors have digested multiple scandals. Most recently, the stock fell 33% on March 20th after U.S. government charged Supermicro co-founder Yi Shan Wally Law and two other individuals regarding an alleged plan to smuggle U.S. assembled servers to China. Supermicro says, don't worry, those were the only three guys involved in our $5 billion chip smuggling operation. Yep, three guys. Supermicro was not named as a defendant in the case. No, just their co-founder, employees, and a contractor. And it has said it's cooperating with the government while launching its own investigation. And I'm sure they'll investigate themselves and find no wrongdoing. Importantly, SMCI has not experienced any GPU allocation changes from NVIDIA, who's always been okay with their chips being sold from China. Who are we kidding? And based on what we can see in its revenue guidance, doesn't appear to have any financial fallout from the allegations, wrote a KeyBank analyst. You have got to be kidding me. This market will buy anything, anything you put on Ron Burgundy's teleprompter. Supermicro stock up 11.4%. It was up 20% earlier today. Maybe people are remembering, oh, that's right, this company's full of shit. But for now, the stock is ripping $31.05. But wait, we've got more. Oh, what happened? I closed it. But we've also got this one. Nano Nuclear Energy is up 7.6% ahead of the opening bell. This is a pre-revenue nuclear company here. Let's see if I can find the story. Ah, yes, here we go. Nano Nuclear signs strategic MOU with Supermicro to power the next generation of AI data centers with advanced nuclear energy. A nuclear company that isn't a nuclear company signed a non-binding letter of intent with a company that is known for fraud in order to power data centers with nuclear reactors that are not licensed by the NRC. And, well, both stocks are ripping this morning. Congratulations. It's the 2020s here. Meanwhile, Disney Films and Parks lift profit in debut quarter for the new CEO. Disney's earnings were actually pretty spectacular, I'm not going to lie. And I say that begrudgingly because I'm clearly no big fan of Disney. What they did to Star Wars, look how they massacred my boy. Walt Disney Company posted stronger results than Wall Street expected thanks to improved profitability as its streaming business, new Avatar and Zootopia movies, and guest spending more at the company's resorts and on cruises. Earnings per share, excluding some items, rose to $1.57 in the second quarter, higher than the average estimate of $1.51. Revenue was $24.9 billion, up 7% from a year earlier. Operating income at all three of Disney's divisions, entertainment, experience, and sports, beat analysts' expectations. Disney's direct-to-consumer unit, which includes Disney Plus streaming service and is led by Joe Early and Adam Smith, achieved double-digit profit margin for the first time. That's because they raised prices and they cut back on the amount of content they were producing. So we got a little bit of shrinkflation and inflation going on there. The film studio, led by Alan Bergman, benefited from strong demand for Avatar, Fire and Ash, Zootopia 2, and Hoppers from Pixar. The three movies generated more than $3.7 billion at the global box office. Operating income fell 5% at the company's sports division due to lower advertising revenue at ESPN and higher fees for programming. That's something Disney struggled with for years. Nothing new there. Guests spent more money at Disney's theme parks in California and Florida, which helped offset a 1% decline in attendance due to fewer foreign travelers. Fewer foreign travelers, probably the K-shaped economy, maybe a little bit of the trade war going on there, but that was offset by people spending more in park, probably because tickets went up and food prices go up. So inflation giving Disney a boost this morning. That stock is up 6.8% ahead of the opening bell, $107.40 for Disney. We also got ADP private payrolls came out. It was a pretty good jobs report. Maybe this is a good omen for the non-farm payrolls that we're going to get later this week, although ADP and non-farm tend to differ wildly from time to time. Private businesses in the U.S. added 109,000 jobs for April of 2026, the largest increase since January of last year, and above forecast for 99,000. Stronger than expected data still reflects the Fed's described low-hire, low-fire labor market, where employers avoid layoffs but have significantly reduced hiring amid slower labor force growth due to lower immigration. The service providing sector led gains with 94,000 jobs, driven by education and health with 61,000, trade, transport, and utilities 25,000, and financial activities up by 9,000. The goods producing sector contributed 15,000 jobs, mainly from construction, up 10,000. Let's see. Small businesses were the top contributors, adding 65,000 jobs, followed by large companies with 42,000. That's encouraging, while mid-sized firms added just 2,000. So you can see there in the chart, pretty good month for ADP private payrolls. We'll see on Friday if that translates into the non-farm payrolls report from the Bureau of Labor Standards Statistics. All right. Meanwhile, the FSB, the Financial Stability Board over at the Bank of International Settlements, they're out with a warning about private credit. Global watchdog FSB unveils action plan on private credit risks. That doesn't really take any action. The world's top financial stability watchdog unveiled a tentative plan. They're tentative, not even sure they want to do it. A tentative plan to tame private credit risks as bankers and policymakers escalate warnings about potential dangers colliding with a political push toward deregulation. The Financial Stability Board, which convenes central banks, regulators, and finance ministries from the world's most powerful economies on Wednesday, said significant data challenges had frustrated its almost year-long effort to assess vulnerabilities in the $1.5 to $2 trillion market. In other words, they don't have any freaking clue what's going on in private credit. Oh, yeah, significant data challenges have frustrated our efforts. Yeah. Why don't you just tell us we don't know what the hell's going on in private credit? That'd be more accurate anyway. Exploring new ways to address those data challenges is a key part of the plan laid out by the FSB to mitigate the risks. So their plan is to explore new ways to address challenges. Nice plan you got there, Bob. Other action points include facilitating supervisory discussions of how vulnerabilities could be monitored, carrying out further risk analysis directly, and hammering out commonly agreed definitions for parts of the private credit ecosystem. They can't agree on shit. All right, what's their plan? Explore new ways? Have supervisory discussions? Agree on definitions? Carry out further risk analysis? They're helpless here. They don't know what the hell is going on in private credit. The sector's complexity, leverage, and interconnectedness could amplify stress in adverse scenarios, posing broader risks to financial stability, the FSB Secretary General John Schindler said. In other words, this could spread to the wider financial system in the banking sector. He added that the lack of transparency could hurt investors as well as authorities, since they may have only partial information about correlations and concentrations across loan portfolios and markets. Without this information, risk may be mispriced and vulnerabilities may go undetected. In other words, it's a box. We know there's a problem in the box. We can't tell you how big the problem is because we can't see inside the freaking box. The FSB also noted that private credit companies tend to lend to more indebted borrowers. Default rates are rising, and instruments sometimes rely on ratings from smaller, lesser known agencies. And guys, that part there, right? I'm having shades of Georgia from The Big Short. Remember the lady with the glasses, the allegory? She couldn't see what was right in front of her face at the ratings agency. They're talking about how private credit relies on ratings from smaller, lesser known agencies. The most glaring example of that was actually right here in my backyard in Chester County, Pennsylvania. And it was a company called Egan Jones. And this is from back in middle of last year. The private credit market is a ticking time bomb in FA Alpha Daily. Since 2015, the private credit market has ballooned from $500 billion to $2 trillion, and it's attracting everyone from Wall Street giants to insurance companies and pension funds. At the center of the boom is a small company called Egan Jones Ratings. The agency employs just 20 analysts, but it graded more than 3,000 private credit deals in 2024 alone. Egan Jones' quick process and generous grades have made it the go-to name for credit issuers and buyers alike. In other words, it was a rating shop. If you pay the fee, they'll rubber stamp that shit AAA. You just sign on the dotted line and you'll get the rating you want to go ahead and sell this to pension funds and anybody else. This company, Egan Jones, they had 20 employees. 20 employees, and they did 3,000 deals in 1 year. That's 150 deals per person per year. Tell me, what kind of due diligence are they possibly doing? How much could they really be opening up the books of these companies and looking inside? And this company operated out of a house in Westchester, Pennsylvania. They've since moved on, but it was this one little house that you couldn't even tell there was a ratings agency working inside of there. It just looked like any other house in the freaking neighborhood. And they did 3,000 private credit deals in a year. And that's what the FSB is warning about, as these lesser known ratings agencies. Maybe, just maybe, their due diligence wasn't so good. Hey guys, I just want to say thank you very much for having your coffee with the Melonheads this morning. Don't forget the like button and the subscribe button on the way out. Thank you very much to my magnanimous melonheads on YouTube, Patreon, and Buy Me a Coffee. Links are down below. Should you be so inclined? Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. Love you guys. Everybody, till next time, live small and dream big.